pomegranates, all those seeds. Man could choke to death. I'd sooner have a turnip. Never knew a turnip to do a man any harm. Hello and welcome to Two Champs and a Chomp, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast founded in 2010 by Will Lentz, myself, Brett Zeiler, and Greg Atkinson. Major props go out to FFG for putting out a great game, George R. Martin for an amazing product, Card Game DB for our hosting, and Josh Woodward to the Creative Commons licensed music you hear today. Welcome to Season 3.
Alright. Hooray for turnips.
Yes.
Wow, you guys are so quiet right now. It's almost like I don't have co-hosts.
Hold on. Welcome to this week's episode of Two Champs and a Chump. This week you have as host myself, Greg Atkinson.
The usual, Will Lentz, Kenan.
Man, the unity and the cohesiveness today sucks.
We're just not. We've been thrown off our game. We were expecting to have a fourth, and he's not here. So,
yep,
it just threw absolutely. Us off.
That's yeah. I wasn't ready for three-way synergy. I was ready for a four-way.
Yeah,
I was brought to the back of this VIP room under false pretenses.
Daryl just can't handle those three ways.
Nope. I was built for a four-way.
I apologize to our listeners. I think that's really all I can do at this point.
It's fine. It's all right. I'm Daryl.
Ah. Man, it took you long enough.
Yeah, good job. Occasionally known as Gear Halt, mainly just on the I'm drunk thread on CGD.
Yeah. Hey man, we got a new comment in there. It's growing slowly.
Yeah. I'm glad it's drifting back to a genial discussion on alcohol rather than the somewhat serious turn it took for a while.
God, get it over yourselves. No, whatever. That's a different conversation.
Yeah.
But anyways.
So let me start the show by making an announcement.
Do tell.
We're not going to get into details today, but I am announcing that in March, the second weekend in March 2014, so next year, we will be having ValorCon here in Nixon, Missouri at my house. Now, for those that have listened to the podcast, they know that we do tournaments often. We've hosted regionals here in Springfield, in the Springfield area. We've traveled all over. We've done our own Moon Boy and Midwestern Melee and so on and so forth. But this is a whole nother ball of wax. We are still in the process of ironing out details and exactly what the weekend's going to look like, but a skeleton outline is it's going to start about 3 o'clock on that Friday afternoon. It will last until that following Sunday evening. I will be catering in every meal. There is a hotel within walking distance of my house that I will highly recommend that people stay there so that they can just walk back and forth. And we will be having Thrones events at my house nonstop for the entire weekend. We will be doing our best to model this event after the ShyCon event that Professor AJ put on for three straight years at his home in Chicago, which was like no other Thrones event ever.
Well, speaking of large events, we've also got another one coming up here before long, actually, at this point, just a couple months out. We've got Gen Con coming in the States. Now, there's not a ton to say about that if you listen to the show regularly, because we talk about how awesome and how much of a blast we have over there all the time, pretty much. So you should go. I think at least some of our crew is going this year, and you should definitely go ahead and go pre-register and buy some tickets for the events, because we are Game of Thrones is kind of lagging right now as far as the LCGs go. Kind of lagging. Netrunner's already maxed out. Star Wars is about 6 tickets away from maxing out. Cthulhu even has maxed out. I forgot to double check, but I think someone had told me that the Lord of the Rings event maxed out. And Thrones is sitting at not quite half for both Joust and Melee. So go ahead, register, show FFG. I don't know, that they need to support us, that they need space for players. Don't wait till the last second.
Yeah.
You know, and Gen Con is kind of a unique event, just in the sense that, you know, you're at a big convention. I understand there's a lot of other things to do. You know, there's other games to play. And the fact that it's no longer Worlds, you know, has kind of minimized the emphasis of the Thrones events at Gen Con. But, you know, it's still a blast. It's still a ton of fun. It is now the North American Championships. I forget what the prizes are, but they still have, you know,
I think there's still
prizes.
Card creation on the line.
Okay, still some card creation. I mean, I'm hoping that by the time people do come out and register, we'll probably end up with 60-plus at each event. You know, we still have, what, about 2 months till Gen Con, so... That's what I'm hoping, about 60-plus. And, I mean, like, for instance, I'm hoping to go to Gen Con. I haven't signed up for either event, you know. What about you, Daryl? You plan on going to Gen Con?
I do. As of right now, I plan on going. I haven't bought my ticket or anything, but this would be my 4th Gen Con in a row. I'm really not one to break tradition, and it is always a great time, always. Always some of the best players show up, and I like to do my favorite thing, which is get trashed with some of the best players. if you haven't done it, you should buy a ticket. I mean, all those new games, you know, they're bright and shiny. They haven't had their Gen Con showing yet, really. And so I could see why they're filling up so early, Thrones has been around for a bit, so, and we all know that everybody likes to sign up last minute.
Will, you haven't signed up yet either, right?
Right. I had not, but this definitely brings it to my attention, so once we're done recording the show, I will definitely be doing so. I would do it right now, but I don't want to be quite that distracted while we're trying to record. Well, let's see. What else do we have to talk about? I think we have some new cards spoiled at the moment. And some modified reprints of old cards. Which would you guys want to hit on first? The new stuff or the modified old ones?
I don't think we're going to have a lot to say about the modified old ones, so why don't we hit those first?
Sure. We've got a couple of those here. I've got them both opened up here. Do either of you guys have them in front of you at the moment?
Yeah, I do.
All right, why don't you read the first one, Daryl? Your pick.
All right, the first one is a reprinted / reworked Jaqen H'ghar. He's 5 cost, every house affiliation that is currently in the game. 3 strength Tricon with the ally trait and a learned crest. And he says, any phase, discard 1 power from your house to give Jaqen H'ghar a keyword of your choice until the end of the phase.
I like him well enough.
Really?
I mean, he is an ally, so he can be discarded. So that's definitely a downside. But, you know, there are a lot of interesting things that are keywords that he is able to gain. You can give him, I don't know, cannot be discarded in the dominance phase before you play Westeros Bleeds, which I know is something Greg really likes these days.
Cannot be discarded is a keyword?
Yes, sir. As is cannot be killed. You could give him CBK before flipping your own Valor.
I'd give him immune to events, but...
We're sure. I knew no attachments was a keyword.
Yes. Cannot be
killed.
We're
absolutely sure things like cannot be discarded or immune to events and stuff like that are keywords.
Yeah.
Pretty sure.
Sure enough. Unless they've changed that in an FAQ and I missed that change, they have been for quite some time now.
All right, if you guys say so.
Yeah.
But
which ups his power level quite a bit, I think, to be able to get some of that sort of stuff.
I mean, the Red Viper has immune to events, and the main reason people play him is because he doesn't kneel to attack guys, and the Renown, etc. I don't think that's worth putting a 5-cost ally in your deck, personally, especially one that you have to discard a power from your house. If you had to discard a card from your hand to give him this effect, then maybe, which would also work with the command mechanic that they're going to be throwing out here in the next cycle.
Yeah, possibly.
I just don't see. Well, there goes another shot to Brotherhood too. Oh, can't run Jockin. He doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
You know?
I figure if you could give him discard 3 power to give him Renown and Vigilance and Intimidate, and you knew that you could push across 3 unopposed challenges because of doing that, then you're essentially getting 6 power, 3 for Renown, 3 for unopposed. And then, 7, if the opponent has 1 on their house, that'd be like 7 power, assuming you played 1. So
possibly grabbing dominance if he's left standing at the end of all that.
Sure, so you're getting rid of 3. In best case scenario, getting 7 or 8, but that's best case scenario.
Okay.
That's assuming he doesn't get disrupted with anything else. I don't know.
Yeah. I doubt I'd go whole hog with him like that. But there are some times that I could see using him for various things.
I hope I'm wrong. Jockin Hagar is like the coolest character ever. That art is still awesome. I just, man, how demoralizing would that be? Play Jockin Hagar. Dissension, womp womp. Like, oh, jeez.
Yeah. But that I think is the biggest thing. He's a 5-cost ally. The rest of it is actually pretty decent. He has the house affiliation, so in-house reducers work on him. The learned crest can be useful for a handful of effects. But the ally trait is definitely.
Oh, that's scary. Funny. He costs 6 for the neutral house card. that is rich. Yeah, I just feel like that could have been done a little bit better, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it'll come out that Jockin Hagar is just broken by discarding power off your house or whatever.
Well, he better not come out broken because this is a fix to a broken version of him.
The other version, I think you just get rid of Stalwart and Infamy and he's fine. Oh, well.
All right, on to the other one.
All right, I've got that one up. That's Compelled by the Rock. It's a House Lannister-only event, and the only card to be banned for flavor reasons. Marshalling. Choose an attachment attached to a card you control. Move that attachment to another card you control. Not good. That's what I'm going to say. It's not good.
I mean, I agree. I mean, it's really going to have 2 uses. Use number 1 is moving a negative attachment from an awesome character to a weak character. So let's say you have Cersei out and someone puts Fishing Net on her. Then you're moving that Fishing Net from Cersei to your Doubting Septa or whatever. Okay, is that worth a draft slot? Probably not. You're probably better off putting in Bastard and bastardizing your own stairs.
Yeah, well, or even the Lanny event, I forget the name now, where you pay X gold to discard the location, or the attachment where X is its cost.
Cannot be bribed, cannot be bought. No, and paid for.
Yeah, bought and paid for, there we go.
Yeah, so then the other use is that if you have a positive attachment on a weaker character and you want to move it to a better character, then it allows you to do that. Other than that, yeah, I'm just not seeing any reason I'm going to ever slot this into a deck.
Yeah, I mean, it would... I feel that maybe its power would jump substantially if you could do it in the challenge phase. You know, if you get a, what's it called? Devious Intentions rolling around and pumping characters up, that might be kind of a cool thing. But the fact that it has to happen in the marshalling phase, whatever.
All right. At least read it one more time. Does it target the attachment or does it target the characters?
Targets the attachment. Does not target characters at all.
Okay. I can think of one more use for it. Which is, if you're building, like, which, I mean, really, this falls into the category, one of the categories I already mentioned. But if, like, for me, if I wanted to build an Uber Joffrey deck, the immune to triggered effects Joffrey, and say I wanted to get a bunch of Maester chains on him so that I could kneel him, you know, claim gold with the gold chain, and then stand him back up when my opponent's character kneels. Well, this would allow me to move a chain that's on my Maester over to Joffrey, assuming I had the Apprentice Collar on him, and, you know, get it set up that way without having to bounce the chains back to my hand and then play them out on Joffrey.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
But all that really is, that just falls into the category of, like I said, of I'm just trying to find a way to move a chain on a less important character to a more important character, or move an attachment, which... I mean, I'm not sure even a deck like that where you're trying to set up an Uber Maester Joffrey is worth it. You know, maybe you're just better off playing, you know, the Gates of the Citadel to save a Maester and return chains to hand, or the Isle of Ravens that returns chains when they get discarded. I mean...
Probably.
Yeah.
Almost certainly. Those are going to be canceled
or
very rarely.
Or Issue of the Citadel.
By the Rock.
So, yeah, I think this is my initial impression is that both of these cards went from being, well, Jockin went from being essentially broken to almost unplayable, and Compelled by the Rock went from being a highly playable card that was honestly never played. It was a highly playable card that was never played that's now unplayable. Really?
Yep. The funny thing is, when Maesters were such a problem, if they had unbanned Compelled by the Rock, I think that would have actually helped rein them in. But, oh well.
Yeah.
Well. The original Compelled, that is. But, there you go. Maybe we should move on to the more exciting ones.
Please.
Now, do you guys have the spoiler article up for them?
Yes, I do.
All right. It's the Game of Thrones Kingsguard chapter pack out of the King's Road cycle. This is the third chapter pack in the series. We've got several spoilers from it. Daryl, you want to lay one of those on us?
Sure will. Let's go ahead and check out Barristan Selmy here. He's neutral, unique, 4 cost, 4 strength military icon. I don't know if he has a power or not. Let's assume he does, because all the other Barristan Selmys do.
He does. If you scroll down just a little bit further, there's this blue text that says his name, Sir Barristan Selmy, and that pulls up the full image of him.
Oh, okay. Well, that's cool. Okay, yeah, here we go. All right, yeah, he's Kingsguard, Queensguard, and a knight. No attachments in renown. And he says challenges, kneel 1 influence or pay 1 gold to bring a Kingsguard or Queensguard character out of shadows. I'm down with that. I like that.
It's going to be more useful, I think, once we talk about the other Kingsguard that are available.
Oh, yeah.
that we can
I guess
see
we should
moment.
Do that.
Yeah.
Sure.
Greg, do you have any of those called up, or should I read?
Yeah, I have them.
Okay.
Well, I'm going to go to, you know, the one that's probably going to make most people salivate offhand, which is Sir Jaime Lannister.
Booyah.
A neutral, you know, Shadows 2, so it costs 2 to bring out a Shadows. 3 strength, military intrigue icons, Kingsguard and Knight, no attachments and renown, and just for the record, in case we forget to say it, all these new Kingsguard we're going to spoil are no attachments. So no weapons on them.
Yeah, bummer.
And then Jaime says, after a card comes out of Shadows, draw a card. Draw 3 cards instead if you control 3 or more Kingsguard characters. And, I mean, yeah, wow. Wow. So just Jaime himself comes out of Shadows, gives you a card. That's fine. That's great, right?
Yep.
And, but anytime any other, not just one of your cards comes out of Shadows, any card comes out of Shadows, draw a card. And, hey, if you're playing him in a dedicated Kingsguard deck, you're going to be draw capping every time, just about.
Yeah. I mean, even if you don't draw a cap off of one trigger of him, you know, with cards like Sell Me and one of these other ones, you're going to near draw cap from cards coming in and out of Shadows so much.
Yep.
Maybe we should read the other two real quick, and then we can kind of talk about the package as a whole. We've also got Sir Aerys O'Kart, neutral, Shadows 1, cost. Sorry, what's that, Daryl?
That was just me going woot woot.
Oh, okay.
I love Sir Aerys O'Kart.
Yeah, and I kind of dig the art here. This is the southern version of Aerys O'Kart. He's got 3 strength, military, and intrigue icons. No attachments, like Greg said. He's a Kingsguard and a Knight. And as a response, after a card comes out of Shadows, choose and stand 1 character you control. Limit 3 times per phase.
Very useful.
Yeah, who wants that last one we've got?
I'll take it. Next up is Sir Preston Greenfield. He's 0 cost to bring out of Shadows. 2 strength, military power, no attachments, Kingsguard and Knight. Any phase, return a Kingsguard or Queensguard character you control to Shadows, limit once per round, and he has a Shadows crest.
So, all right, there we go. Now we've got the package. What do we think about this as a whole?
All right, well, Preston, let's talk about Preston for a second, because...
Can we talk about the fallacy from the books on him?
What? That art looks awesome, by the way.
Oh, it does. I'm just thinking, Sabiris and Selmy makes sense to interact with a Kingsguard or a Queensguard. Spoiler alert, guys, but he gets kicked out of the Kingsguard and becomes a Queensguard, if you haven't seen that yet. Sir Preston Greenfield, on the other hand, again, spoiler alert, is in the Kingsguard and then dies in a riot in King's Landing. So I don't understand why he interacts with Queensguard.
Is Cersei not Queen Regent when that happens?
Yes, but he's still titled a Kingsguard.
Yeah, there's really... Again, spoiler alert, there's really no Queensguard in Westeros.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well,
you know. Protecting Joffrey in the books, because Cersei's Queen Regent, but they are Joffrey's guards.
Right. Oh, whatever.
So, I don't know. But anyway, I'll let Greg carry on. I just kept staring at that and being weirded out.
All right, well, the first question is and Zyler was asking about this earlier today, was on the limit once per phase on Preston Greenfield.
Round.
It's round.
Per round.
I mean, limit once per round. If he goes into Shadows, does that reset? Because he essentially left play.
Right. My answer to him via text was, the game has no memory for cards unless FFG decides they want otherwise. We can see proof of that on... like, the challenge response events that are limit once per phase, right? Or once per challenge or whatever, depending on, you know, the cards. If the game truly had no memory, then each separate copy of those you had in your hand would be playable one after the other. But if FFG says they want it to have memory for a particular card, it does. So I'm assuming they're going to say that Preston does.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way it was intended to be. So I'm sure that they'll FAQ it at the least. Or maybe that's at the most. I don't know. But yeah. Sir Preston Greenfield rules.
Because without that limit, it would just be abusive with the Queen of Thorns.
Oh, God. Yeah. And, I mean, man, this guy's on par, I feel, with Cyril Ferrell and, like, doing some epic battle stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, you just go in whenever you want him to. Or maybe you send out a bigger Queensguard or Kingsguard guy and you have gold to bring him out. I don't know. That's pretty sick.
Yeah.
This is just nutty to me. I mean, we have a couple other effects to pop stuff back into Shadows. Mm-hmm. This is by far the easiest effect. There is nothing else that basically is non-conditional.
Yeah.
This is,
the other ones are all keyed off of challenges, right?
Yeah, Tywin, you have to win a challenge with him, and Sirio, you have to win a challenge with Sirio to put Sirio back in. The only condition on Sir Preston Greenfield is it's got to be a Kingsguard or Queensguard. And I realize that, you know, there is a minimal number of Kingsguard and Queensguard Shadows cards. But obviously
zero Queensguard that we've seen so far. Zero with Shadows, anyway.
What about the... No, there's a Shadows Barristan Selmy from the King's Landing cycle. Didn't he have the Queensguard trait?
Oh, he may have. I may have been forgetting him since you couldn't play him with the new one. No, the Shadows one is Kingsguard. Bizarrely enough, he is a Targaryen Kingsguard with Shadows.
Okay, then.
He'll still work with Preston, of course, but there are no Queensguard with Shadows at the moment. Maybe there's some in this pack. I don't know. Or somewhere in the set.
Well, okay, so he's still popping Kingsguard in the Shadows. You know, another interesting thing is
wow,
I don't know.
He actually makes that Barristan kind of playable, come to look at it.
I don't have any great ideas in my head yet, but that doesn't say a printed Kingsguard or Queensguard, so you also have possibility for trait manipulation.
Turn Varys into a Kingsguard, put him back into Shadows.
Yeah, I mean, there's several options there.
Yeah. You know, honestly, just looking at, now that you got me looking at that old Barristan again, you know, for 2 gold, using him turn after turn doesn't seem terrible. You're going to get a 4 strength, Bicon, you know, body for challenges. And then response, you're going to get to look at an opponent's hand, then name a non-plot card, and they can't play that card this phase. I mean, for 2 gold a turn, I get a body, I get to look at their hand every turn, and can't play essentially whatever the best event is they have available. You know, not the worst thing ever.
And you could put a weapon on that one.
Yeah. I mean, and then, you know, of course, we're kind of staring at Preston, but Sir Aerys Oakheart is looking pretty phenomenal there. I mean, the one we already had in the game is going to be hard to pass up, even for those houses, but if you want to play around with some Shadows shenanigans, being able to stand up to 3 of your characters a turn with Oakheart is pretty awesome. Sorry, per phase.
Yeah, and Oakheart also doesn't say, you know, he doesn't stand Kingsguard or Queensguard. He'll stand anyone.
Right, which plays nicely with those epic battles, like Daryl was just saying a minute ago. Pop Preston back into Shadows, bring him out in epic battles. You've got him, Sir Aerys Oakheart, stand somebody else. You've got a couple people to use for an epic battle now. Pop Preston back into Shadows.
So
it again.
Here's my question. I guess we need to address the elephant in the room. Do people start playing the white book again?
Yeah, I did want to bring that up because it does seem interesting. Looking at these cards, and I just realized we accidentally skipped over one of the spoilers that is fully visible, but we can get to that here in a second. None of them interact with the white book very well at all. You may be able to bring someone out of Shadows as a surprise to win a challenge on defense for the white book, but once you've done that once, then your opponent knows what that card is, even if you send them back into shadows with Preston, it's not going to be a surprise after that. So, yeah, I don't think White Book will see play. I would probably go Knights of the Realm if I'm wanting to build a deck with the Kingsguard, unless, you know, I wanted to trigger some of the other Shadows effects like the Guildhall or the Black Cells.
Yeah, I could see definitely Knights of the Realm, and I can also see the Shadows agenda in a heavy Shadows deck, running some of the out-of-house Shadows stuff for some extra cool effects.
Mm-hmm. Well, real quick, maybe, since I did just recall that we skipped over one of the cards we had the full spoiler for, we've also got On My Oath, which is a Kingsguard-related plot. It's a 3/7/1, and when revealed, put a Kingsguard or Queensguard character with the Shadows Crest into Shadows from your dead or discard pile. Which seems pretty awesome to me. 3/7/1 aren't stats we see very often, and these guys all look pretty powerful, so being able to grab one that died back and, you know, prop him back into Shadows so he's primed to go again, that just seems pretty awesome.
I wish I knew what Shadow Killer did.
Yeah, we can see it has stealth, and I assume the rest of that word is deadly. Don't know what else it could be. And I can kind of guess something about comes out of Shadows, kill a player, something, and I can see her come, C-O-M-M. I'm assuming that's command. And I see saved was in parentheses, so probably cannot be saved. Kill something controlled, well, a character controlled by whoever has the most House cards Baratheon or least only. Cards. Probably most cards at their command and cannot be saved. That would be friggin' huge.
Yeah, but look at the cost to strength ratio.
That's bad, but
4-1.
You know, ouch. Pay 4 gold to kill a character controlled by whoever's ahead and they can't be saved. That could be pretty big.
Yeah.
At that point, I think the you know, body on the character is just kind of icing.
Yeah, maybe. But let's take a moment here and just look at the art on all these cards. Don't these cards look great?
Yeah, that Hound, which all we can see is that he's a Lannister with a Shadows cost of 0 and 4 strength. Don't know what he does, but man, that art looks great. It's the art from the playmats this year, right?
Yeah. I just, even that Jaime, like, just with the castle behind him or whatever, I just, this art is sick. And Sir Preston Greenfield, I'm a big Dark Souls fan, and that kind of looks like that. I don't know, that looks sick, man. So, great job, FFG. Great job on that art. That looks fantastic.
Preston looks great. And now that you've got me looking at him again, I got to ask Greg. Greg, you've been a huge fan of Stark Siege decks. Now that at some point here before long, you're going to be able to play 3 Sirios and Sir Preston Greenfields, is that deck going to get degenerate?
I mean, the only problem with Sir Preston Greenfield is if he does maintain his memory, you know, he'll only be able to pop himself back into Shadows once.
Yeah.
So, you know, as opposed to Sirio, you pull off the Sirio stuff and you play 4 epic battles, you're getting Sirio on every single one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Preston Greenfield, you're only going to get him on 2, and he doesn't have the stealth. So, I mean, honestly, Sirio is still a more ideal character for that deck, but what Preston Greenfield offers is a little bit of redundancy,
right,
which isn't a bad thing at all.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. I don't know. I'm itching to have Kings Road cards pretty badly now. Everything I see about this cycle looks more and more awesome.
Okay, so let's talk about a couple cards in the current cycle.
Okay.
Are you guys ready for a Berlitha or two?
I'd say we're up for that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, for those that don't listen to the show all the time, Berlitha is what we affectionately call our ban, errata, restrict, or leave it the hell alone. Back when we first started the show several years ago, it was just ban a rat or leave it the hell alone, and since then we've gotten the restrict option put in there.
Indeed.
So, card number one is the card that I think is getting the most buzz during regional season. It is the card that it is, that is most attached to winning decks, I believe, although we haven't done plot analysis, but
yeah,
it will be.
We don't have the stats on plots aside from already restricted ones, sadly.
It would be the Long Voyage. So, guys, how do you feel about the Long Voyage?
It's okay. I didn't want to play it just because it was popular, so I tried to avoid it until the last moment, though. As you and listeners know, I did give in the day before our regional and go ahead and build one and then play it.
Which Daryl and Zyler did too.
I, being a stronger man than Will, gave in an hour before the tournament.
Yes, and you did hold off longer. I don't think it's a surprise that Zyler gave in, though.
No, not at all. I mean, what I will say about the Long Voyage is it's a bit degenerate, is what I want to say. I mean, it's no doubt, you know, just powerful, just being the guaranteed draw. I mean, if I had it, if I had my option, if I had the power, I guess I would restrict it personally. It's surprising, you know, an 85 card deck. You think, no one's gonna play that, and then it turns out that extra draw is just such a huge deal in this game.
No, Daryl, most of us did not say nobody's gonna do that. You said no one's gonna do
me
that.
And
the moment
Brett
I saw that
said
agenda,
that.
I was like, oh, this agenda is going to be awesome. We're going to see it all the time. But I wasn't on that episode to rate the cards.
Yeah, so you mysteriously avoid all of the chapter pack reviews.
Yeah, well, now that you guys have me roped in via Skype, I might have to start being involved in more of those chapter pack reviews to try and prevent you from looking like such utter fools.
That sounds like a good idea.
How generous. I was going to call us asses, but thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay. Here's my thoughts. Number one, the first regional we played at was Tulsa, and it was in mid-April, and it was won by a TLV deck. And at the time, there was not yet buzz on the Long Voyage. Okay, like Daryl brought a Long Voyage deck, but that's just because he copied Bruno's deck. And Bruno had just won a California regional with the Long Voyage, but there still wasn't that buzz. It was almost like Bruno won with it, and people were like, whoa? You know, it was like people were surprised a little bit, even those people that knew it was a solid agenda, they just weren't expecting to see people playing it left and right yet. And then it won in Tulsa, and then buzz started picking up on it, you know. Oh, wow, yeah, and then we start seeing it just winning.
It was Matt that won with it, though, just to clarify for listeners.
What did I say?
You said buzz. Buzz.
You're talking about that, buzz as in, like...
No, I was saying, Matt won with it, but there wasn't buzz about it.
Gotcha. He played against Buzz Hannon in the finals.
Yes.
So I misunderstood, and I thought you were naming him. Now I get it.
If I did, I apologize. It was definitely Matt Phillips.
No, if you meant Buzz, B-U-Z-Z, like, talking about it, now I understand. I misunderstood.
Okay. Thank you, last 60 seconds of our podcast, for being the worst minute ever.
Yeah.
So, anyways, point being is that it gained a ton of momentum, and then it just has started winning regionals left and right. So by the end of May, I'm sitting here saying after a month and a half, dear Lord, I'm already tired of this agenda. Even though I knew it was good from day one, I just did not expect it to get such momentum so quickly, just because I felt like a lot of people would actually have Daryl's mindset, which is I can't play with an 85-card deck, okay? And so since I thought a lot of people would feel that way, I just didn't think it would get momentum that fast, but I was obviously wrong. So by the end of May, I'm already feeling like, man, I'm tired of this agenda. I'm ready for it to just already go the way of the dodo bird. I mean, since all the other card advantage agendas have essentially been put on the restricted list, man, I mean, it just needs to go on. Now, all that being said, I still think it needs to go on. But I will say this. It is unlike every other card advantage agenda, because when you sit at the table and someone has the long voyage agenda against you, you have no idea what they're going to play. Okay, now, if someone sits across the table and they have the Maester agenda, well, you're probably going to see a lot of Maesters, and the chains are going to do their thing.
Yeah.
You sit across the table against someone using the Winter agenda, you know you're going to see the White Raven, probably Samwell, Carrion Birds. Most likely it's going to be out of House Greyjoy. Not always, but most likely it will be. You pretty much know what you're going to see. Okay, Summer agenda, it's probably going to be out of Martell or Targ. Not always, but most of the time. You know what you're going to see. But against the Long Voyage, it has actually enabled deck types that were quite likely Tier 2 or Tier 3 deck types, because now they have this consistent draw engine. You want to build a Bolton deck? Hey, you know what? You can with the Long Voyage. You want to build a, you know, Clansman deck? Hey, you can with the Long Voyage. You know, like yeah. These decks that a lot of people might not have thought much of because maybe they didn't have a solid or consistent draw engine, you can now. It doesn't automatically make them Tier 1, but it helps to solve that little problem of how am I going to get card advantage with this particular deck. And that is the truth, is that it has actually opened up the competitive scene to other deck types. Now, what it's done is close the agenda types. We are seeing, in my opinion, less agendas winning because the Long Voyage is winning so much. But what we can honestly say is, man, you know, when you sit across the table from one of these, you don't know what you're going to see.
Well, you know what you're not going to see, though. You're not going to see a combo deck out of it. And a control build is less likely. They don't necessarily work quite as well. So, I think it still excludes a few other things other than just agenda choices.
I'll agree with you that it absolutely opens up different deck types. Which is why I think that, you know, restricting it would be fine. You're going to shut off some serious problem cards that could come about, but you're still going to give people the option to run, you know, TLV, which, man, unconditional draw rules. And yeah, there's all kinds of decks. You could even build a House Dane deck if you want to.
No, I mean, you can.
Yeah, I know.
I'm not saying it's going to become a Tier 1 deck just by using the Long Voyage, but it's just going to help with the draw. And that is something we just know in this game, that in general, the more cards at your disposal, the better off you are. And, you know, that is what I like about it. I like agendas that open up deck types in the competitive scene. What I don't like about it is it's become too much of a no-brainer. Okay, and we are seeing it win too often, and I do think it needs to go on the restricted list. I mean, I'll be honest, I'm not convinced even putting it on the restricted list is going to drop its power level that much. It seems like for the most part, the restricted card I'm seeing Long Voyage players play is one of the plots, because they know in an 85 card deck, they're not going to, if they run a non-plot restricted card, they're not going to see it as often. So, hey, I'll run a plot because I have control over when that's going to come. So I'm seeing lots of Search and Detain or a Fury plot or Fear of Winter or that sort of thing. And, you know, so if you put it on the restricted list, it just means that they're going to lose those restricted plot options they're running, or for the few decks that are running a non-plot, they're going to lose that. I mean, I think it'll still be a highly played agenda even on the restricted list, and I'm okay with that, okay? I don't want it to, like, just go away, but mostly because I do think it opens up options for some of these other deck types, but I do think it's appropriate for it to go on the restricted list.
I think, you know, there are agendas, you know, we've gone over before, there are agendas with kind of built-in ways for the opponent to interact with them, and agendas that kind of police themselves. You know, of course, Summer and Winter, for instance, gives the opponent some room to interact. Say, Knights of the Realm are kind of self-policing because of the way the mirror matches play out. But TLV definitely doesn't give the opponent a way to interact with its benefit. It does have a chance to police itself, which I ran into in the top eight at our regional, where it just crapped out. Variance got me in the 85-card deck, and I essentially got diddly, and blockade kept me on diddly and kept me from entering, you know, the game in time. I think I would kind of just like to see that played up a little bit more with an errata, really. I think that would affect things more than a restriction would. Either or, I could see maybe raising it to 100 cards, which would be a pain to shuffle, but hey, 85 already is anyway, or drop it to a max of two of any card in the deck to play up the variance so that you actually have to think, you know, what's my game plan? Can I weather this if I don't get the, you know, the perfect draw every time?
You know, speaking of variance, I think that that is a larger factor than people are giving credit to. The first time I saw you play that deck, Will, and you played against me, and I was using a Stark Black Sails, and you played that Greyjoy one. You had like a 6-card flop against me, and I'm just like, man, you know, that deck was awesome. And I saw a couple other good flops when Huseman was playing with it against you. Mm-hmm. And then Kristen takes basically the same version of the deck, comes to my house to play some practice games for the regional, and she's just getting these 2- and 3-card drops left and right.
Was
and
she like, taking mulligans just out of curiosity?
Yeah, no. See, that's it. She'd be like, Greg, I think I need to mulligan this hand. And I'm like, let me look at it. And I look at it, I'm like, oh, yeah, you need to mulligan this hand for sure. This is a 2-card drop. And then she'd mulligan into, like, honestly, a pretty crappy 3-card drop. It was just there is something about the – and one of our statistician listeners can get on and talk about that. But, you know, if you had a deck of 2 cards – and one of those cards is a character, one of those cards is a location. You know, when you go to your draw phase, you know absolutely without a doubt you have 50% characters, 50% locations, because you only have 2 cards in the deck. Now, as your deck continues to get bigger and bigger, even if you maintain that ratio, if you have 10 cards in your deck and 5 are characters and 5 are locations, your odds are now not as good of drawing, you know, a perfect 50-50 mixture when you do your draw 2 as it was when you only had 2 cards in your deck. Likewise, the higher you get, the odds of that happening, you know, just continue to go down. And again, any of our statistician listeners can tell me I'm wrong, but it just sure seems like weird things happen when it comes to the homogeneous mixture of a deck. The bigger the deck gets, and the odds are, and I'm not going to say the odds are worse, because I have seen with these, you know, these decks, these great flops like the one you had, the 6-card flop, or several others. Jonathan Bitten told me he had a 7-card flop at his regional last weekend. And then all of a sudden you have, you know, it seems like 3 games in a row where you're like 2-card flop, 3-card flop, but I hate it. 2-card flop, you know, and it's just like, what the heck?
Well, I don't know. I think that doing anything to it right now, other than restricting it, would be a bit premature as far as errata or even banning. But you got to admit, you know, I feel like it put the game in kind of a good place. I kind of like where the game is. I think we're seeing a variety of different decks, and we're seeing a lot of variance in tournaments. The only thing that's not variety, whatever the word is I'm looking for, is that everybody's playing TLV.
Which is kind of, you know, back and forth. I don't know. You guys saw me try, what, half a dozen different decks over the last couple months, desperately trying to find something that could keep up that wasn't TLV. And in the end, I decided I had never found anything, and I jumped ship.
Or what about the other problem where, you know, FFG keeps producing cards that give you a benefit if you're not running an agenda. But if I don't want to run Season, or I don't want to run Knights of the Hollow Hill, or whatever, why not run TLV? You know, if I'm not going to have some kind of dedicated theme, you know, it's just those cards aren't enough with Long Voyage running around.
Yeah, and that is probably my least favorite thing about the agenda, is that right now it just feels so much of a, well, heck, why not? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I just, it too often feels like a no-thought agenda, which is, I'm just putting this in to solve the draw problem of my deck. And to me, there's not a lot of thought. Now, again, that's balanced by the fact that we have seen a rise in additional deck types become tournament playable due to this agenda. So, I mean, to me, that's the fine line of there's really not much thought into it, but it does help these other deck types. So,
yeah, Bear Rush came back. Good thought, at least in Joust.
Yeah.
It's always been relevant in Melee. Anywho, so what are the final thoughts here?
I say restrict.
I will also say restrict.
And I say errata.
So, Will, you're fine with it staying unrestricted, and they just give the errata of either 100 cards, or you can't play with more than 2 copies of any card.
Right. I just don't think the restriction will affect it enough. You know, like you said, most folks will play one of those restricted plots. Honestly, none of those plots are just, you know, game-changing, built my deck around this sort of thing. They'll find another plot to slot in its place.
Yeah. All right. So on to card number 2. Negotiations at the Great Sept. Ban, errata, restrict, or leave it the hell alone.
I guess I got to go first on this again, huh? You know, if I had it my way currently, I would leave it the hell alone. I think that it's a great equalizer for aggro decks and rush decks, and yes, I realize that control decks can take advantage of it, but it's a plot that gives your opponent the chance to do it as well, which is part of the reasons why when I first saw it, I was like, what? Why would I do this? Why would I want this to happen? And it's turning out in a lot of games that your opponent isn't going to want to do it. But honestly, in most of the games that I played, either I didn't take advantage of it, or my opponent did, or neither one of us did. So it hardly ever came down to me needing it and my opponent not taking advantage. So I feel like it's okay where it's at currently. I might change my mind down the road after the next set comes out or whatever. But as it stands right now, it's a great card for rush decks and for aggro decks.
You know, one of the complaints I've heard about that is it's making aggro too good, and it's kind of filling the hole that aggro decks have, which is, you know, you kind of empty out your hand. You play a bunch of characters, you aggressively go after their characters with kill events or location destruction events or just these one-offs that you're trying to get massive board position, you know, and that the problem with aggro decks over the last few years has been that maybe you jump off to a big start, but then your opponent drops the Valor on you and you have no cards in hand or very few cards in hand, and they've built up a hand and now all of a sudden they just turn the game. Well, the thing about it is this game has been dominated over its lifetime by control decks. And now this plot absolutely is catered towards aggro decks, whether that's aggro in the form of power grab like Baratheon or aggro in the form of, you know, kill or
character
or
removal
board
as a
position
whole,
like Stark or Greyjoy, that sort of thing. And, you know, I feel like, yes, in those decks, it's almost an auto include right now, right? But shouldn't we have this precarious balance of aggro versus control? This game has been dominated by control. So, yeah, now we have these aggro decks that, you know what, if you're playing against one, You have to assume they have that plot, and you need to play accordingly. Maybe you choose not to do the military challenge and do the intrigue because you're like, oh, I got to try and get that last card out of their hand so that when they play negotiations, they can't refill, you know? Or maybe you choose actually not to do the intrigue at all because you're like, it doesn't do me any good right now to drop them from 4 to 3 because they'll just play negotiations and get back up to 5 anyways. So I actually think it's creating a dynamic in terms of challenge phase thought process, an extra layer of challenge phase thought process that's good for the game. Where Rule by Decree was a card you were always thinking about, like if someone said, how many cards do you have in hand, and you had more than them, and they're asking you, you know, you're thinking, oh, crap, Rule by Decree. You know, your Rule by Decree was a card always on your mind, and there was this magical threshold of more than 4 cards and having more than your opponent. Now there's this bottom threshold, which is don't ever get below 1. You know, yeah. Don't empty your hand out to 1, or I mean less than 1, to where, you know, someone can play negotiations and they're refilling up to 5 and you're not doing anything.
But maybe even don't empty down to 1, like you started to say, because then if they can win an intrigue, you're screwed.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously you plan for that. But, yeah, you're right. Yeah, if you empty down to 1 and they haven't done their intrigue challenge, you have problems, you know, that sort of thing. So I think – I just feel like it adds a new layer. And I don't think it's a bad layer yet. Now, I understand a lot of people are complaining already about this card. And I agree. Look, the stats are great on it. Just by itself, it's a 3-3-2 or a 3-2-2 or whatever it is, 3-2-2. I mean, look, 3 gold, 2 claim, fine, great, phenomenal, okay? And yes, most of the time it will not be negative, although there are a few times it can be. I have seen games where it has helped the opponent more than the person that's playing it, okay? That has happened, but it's not as regular as Valor. I've much more often seen Valor hurt the person playing it than I have negotiations so far. But, you know, what I hear people saying it's just an auto include in every deck, and I think that that's bullcrap. Number one, we've had a plot called At the Gates that's been almost an auto include, not quite, but almost an auto include over the last several years. And this card basically says you can't play At the Gates. You know, you can't play, you got to choose one or the other. So you're going to tell me that Maesters, which is still a very viable deck type, which is still most likely going to want to run At the Gates, it's not going to be an auto-include in that sort of deck. You know, we were just talking about these new Kingsguard decks that'll be shadow-based. There's a good chance they would prefer to play, you know, what is it, City of Lies, that put 2 cards in the shadows early in the game as a seed plot. Now, with that one, you could still play it with negotiations at the Great Set, but you're going to have to play negotiations first. Mm-hmm. So I just don't think it's as much of an auto-include as people say. I think it's only an auto-include in aggro-style decks, okay? But in control decks, in decks that are really focused on already building card advantage, like you already have a ton of card draw in your deck, in decks that are already running other city plots, I just think that there's a lot of deck types that negotiations will not go in that deck, and I'm simply – I actually feel the same as Daryl. At this point in time, I'm unwilling to do anything with it. I kind of want to just leave it the hell alone. I reserve the right to change my mind in 6 months, okay? But at this point in time...
Or just after Gen Con.
Yeah. At this point in time, I just kind of want to leave it the hell alone.
You know, it's kind of interesting you brought up the control thing. I actually had a very control-focused... Martell Knights of the Hollow Hill deck that I ran negotiations in and was actually extremely happy with it. And I can't help but wonder if something that might help balance it a little bit is if opponents were more willing to trade in their hands. I've noticed playing it, not just with that Martell deck, but just in general, opponents very rarely trade in their hand. And I can't help but wonder if that's something they ought to do more often. You know, if you've already got 8-9 cards in your hand or something, I can understand wanting to hang on to them. But if you've got 5-6, and say you are playing the control deck in that matchup, and you don't have a couple of immediate answers to what's going on the board, why not trade it in? Heck, if you don't have some of those immediate answers that you know are in the deck, maybe you ought to trade in when you've got 8 cards, you know? I'd like to see what happened if folks were more willing to trade in their hands on their opponent's negotiations.
I mean, I've seen people not trade in their hands when they have 3 or 4 cards in hand, and that's really odd.
Yeah.
You know, but they obviously like a card or two that's in their hand, and they're not willing to do it. And while I understand that, you know, my thought is that, you know, if I build a deck that I think top to bottom is a solid deck, I'd rather have 5 cards in hand than 3. Unless it's a combo deck and I have a piece of one of those combos in hand, you know, I'm not going to do it.
Or if it's Brotherhood and I've got Barrack.
yeah. Brotherhood and you got Barrack or Mad Huntsman, 2 characters that you think are, you know, an ultra key to your deck. Sure, you're not going to do it. But I think most of the time, if you have 5 or less, definitely if you have less than 5, I'm absolutely changing it. If I have 5 or more, and I like my cards in hand, there's not going to be any reason for me to do it. But if I have less than 5, you know, I'm absolutely going to be doing it, barring a combo deck or a very, very key piece. So,
yeah. So, I think the only thing is the stats are maybe a little higher than they should be, much like Fear of Winter. Like, you know, I hate the card in general, but I probably wouldn't mind it nearly as much if it was just 1 claim. I think Negotiations is in a similar spot where, man, if it was just 1 claim, I think everybody would be much more okay with it. But the 2 claim really, really keeps that pressure on to a high degree. I can't imagine that FFG would errata claim on a card, since that was, you know, a well-discussed topic with Fear of Winter in its heyday. So I think I come down on the side of leave it the hell alone for the moment, but I'm with you, Greg. I reserve the right to change that opinion, and I'm going to say after Gen Con. I think in between regionals and Gen Con here, we'll give folks some more times to test out, you know, some different strategies and counterattack and whatnot, and we'll kind of see how the field looks at Gen Con.
Well, one of the areas I've seen most complaints is from the European metas. And historically, the European metas have been different than, say, the North American metas, where Europeans have historically been more aggro-focused, okay, and North American has by far been more control-focused. And I can see why people in Europe, why they would not like this plot, because it just accentuates the typical, you know, aggro style that they've seen over there for the last few years. So, you know, I don't think that changes my opinion on it one way or the other. I'm just simply saying I can understand a little bit considering their general style of play that we see over there.
Yep.
So, wow, that's kind of boring. We're all in agreement, huh? Leave it the hell alone.
Yeah, weird, huh?
I know, it disgusts me, but whatever.
Though I guess I would
honestly,
say,
honestly, it kind of scares me. When I'm agreeing with Daryl, I should be a little scared.
Yeah. It's probably going to turn out that we're all wrong. So.
Oh, I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying it's not a great plot. Look, it is. It's a good plot. Very good plot. I'm just not convinced it needs restriction yet, so.
Yeah. So, final thoughts. 2 Champs and a Champ says, leave it the hell alone.
Unanimously. Wow.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Damn it.
Sorry. I was busy thinking about the negative responses we're going to get on this episode because of that opinion.
Who cares? I've never gotten to do the Ruth Bader Ginsburg thing. I've been trying for 3 years now.
One of these days, Daryl. One of these days.
3 years. Well, you know, Let's restrict Balor. It kills everybody. It's a crutch. Balor's a crutch.
Heard that from more than one person. Okay. So, aside from that, we've got a little bit of interest in talking about the show and related topics for the moment, because... Hey, spoiler alert, episode 9 happened, so if you don't want to hear about episode 9 of season 3, turn off the podcast now.
If you haven't read book 3, turn off the podcast now.
Yes. So, Red Wedding, huh?
Okay, first, Daryl, have you watched it?
Yes, I did.
Okay, I know you've been playing this game now for several years. You knew it was coming, right?
Yeah, I did.
How did you still feel even knowing it was coming?
Oh, my God. I mean, while I was watching it, I watched it before I went into work that day, and that just ruined my day. Like, it's, oh, my God, it's just so much more violent than I thought it would be for some reason, and... whenever he's stabbing her in the stomach, I thought you guys said that they left Jane Westerling alone. Like, oh my God.
They did in the books.
Oh, okay. Well, they really pushed it to a whole new level. And, I have to say it's a very violent scene, but man, it's fantastic. It's a fantastic scene. Just Walder Frey is just such an asshole. It's just great. You know, it'll leave you speechless. Like when the credits started rolling.
Oh yeah.
I just like stood there, and I was just like, I cannot believe that happened. And even knowing some of the things I know that are going to come up later, I was still just like, oh my God. You know, it was heavy. I just want to know what goes through George R. R. Martin's mind whenever he decides that, hey, this needs to happen. Like I realize. You'll probably need to do something about Rob. Otherwise, he's just going to come in there and kick everybody's ass, and that's going to be the end, right? But what a way to do it.
You know, I like that you mentioned the credits there, because I think that was one of my favorite parts of the episode, because it ends on that note, and like that's it. Like, it's dead silent going into and through the credits, which was different from what they'd been, you know, doing previously, and I think it just... it reinforces that sense of shock that the viewers are feeling. Like, it's almost like the show is in shock and speechless as well, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that was most interesting is for those of us that have read the books, you know, we were kind of keeping our eye out for other people's reactions to it. Mm-hmm. There were several websites that, you know, either Twitter sites that were tracking people's responses or this video that came out of a compilation of video clips of people's responses to
Did
that.
Did you
that
see Maisie funny. Williams?
Yeah, even George R. R. Martin went on the Conan O'Brien show and they showed, you know, George R. R. Martin some of these responses of people and stuff like that. So... That, you know, that was some of the more interesting aspects to me is just seeing the fallout. I mean, the number of people I saw say they're never watching the show again because of this. You know, just like, I hate this, you know, I'm never watching the show again. I'm interested to see episode 10's ratings. You know, that is actually like this big thing to me is I want to see episode 10's ratings and see up, down, where is it at? So...
No, I'm afraid it's going to go down. Most everyone I know that read the books hit the Red Wedding and stopped. And, you know, the length of time that they stopped was different for everybody. But I know people that, you know, just quit reading the book for as long as a few weeks because they just couldn't bear to read anymore. And eventually their curiosity got the better of them and they went back to it and, you know, finished it and loved the series. But... I think we're going to see that same reaction from a lot of viewers. I think 10's going to be down.
Mm. Yeah, I guess we'll see. Yeah, I haven't seen what the ratings were for episode 3, though. I generally like to track that sort of stuff, but I hadn't yet seen it, so...
for episode 3 or 9?
I'm sorry, season 3, episode 9.
Okay, gotcha.
For this one, to see if they had gone up or down or what had happened, so.
Well, they better follow it up with something pretty good for 10, but who knows? I don't know what happens in the books, but. And I know that normally the last episode of season, they just kind of open up to have something cool happen or whatever, or show something cool. But yeah, that was heavy. That was heavy, man.
I mean, I knew it was coming, and it was still depressing as all get out. You know, like, I was rooting for Rob when I read the books at first, and it crushed me when I read that. And I couldn't help but find myself rooting for him again on the show, you know?
Yeah.
Props and slops. I've got one this week. Nobody else wants anything.
Go ahead. I probably got one somewhere.
Okay. Well, I just finished reading earlier today Sandman Slim, first novel in a series of the same name. And it's kind of the urban fantasy thing, very similar to the Dresden novels that you'll hear folks on this show rave about fairly often. And it was a blast. I think I like Stark a little bit better than I like Harry, even. Stark is a bastard, but a fairly unrepentant one. He's at least self-aware. Dresden, I think, is a bastard, but just doesn't admit it for most of the series. Stark, however, knows it from the get-go, and he's just out for revenge. Not giving away too much that you couldn't read on the back of the jacket. He gets sent to hell for a while, and his girlfriend dies while he's there. So he comes back just purely for revenge, just to kill everyone else that was in the circle that sent him to hell and then eventually killed his girlfriend. And it's a pretty awesome ride.
Nice. I thought I was going to have a prop, but I didn't.
I have no props or slops, but while you were talking, I did look up the ratings for Reigns of Castamere, and they had a 5.22, which was up from the previous week. I'm not sure if that's their highest ever, but I think it's very close to it. So,
way to be. Well, we'll have to remember that so we can compare for next week.
Yeah.
For sure.
So shizzle.
So you guys did not, in fact, have anything else?
I'm going to prop my own Twitter account. If you haven't followed me on Twitter yet, you should probably do so. I've been trying to get on there more. And the band that I propped last week tweeted me back the other day.
Nice.
So that's worthless, but still cool. It is.
Well,
it's true. Twitter is the best way to like interact with people who don't give a shit about you.
Yes, I have learned that trying to speak to authors I like.
And I mean, every now and then you might even get a tweet back or something. They don't care though. I mean, honestly, Twitter's kind of a cool thing to be able to interact with people that you don't want to hit on. You don't want to really have like a personal tie to. Like having like someone you don't really know and add them on friend and fit. On Facebook is like, I don't know, but Google Plus or Twitter, it's like, hell yeah, man. I don't know. So, Twitter, it's the thing.
It's for reals. Well, yeah. I've got a couple things. They're not quite props or slops, but this seemed like the best place to fit them. They are requests, I think, of our listeners. I've been trying to put the show out there a little bit more, reposting it on Reddit and Dig and Stumble Upon and stuff through the little automated reposting thing on CardGameDB. So trying to spread the word a little bit, and I know that our likes on Facebook have been continuing to creep up over the last week or so. So if you happen to have found the show via one of those methods, let me know. Post it on Facebook or shoot us a line, twochamps1chump@gmail.com, just because I'm curious if that's actually doing any good. So, yeah. But I've also got a second request. that one is Board Game Geek. I would like to give Thrones a little bit better of a presence over there, and get our podcast all, you know, like mentioned on the Game of Thrones page there, and maybe get our listeners to come rate Thrones over there so we can push it higher in the ratings. But unfortunately, I don't use that site very often or hardly at all, so I don't know how much of it works. So if you can tell me how to actually rate anything and or get our podcast stuff listed there, let me know.
There we go.
Yeah.
Danger Zone! The ghost.